Thank you. I'm going to stand up so that I don't put myself to sleep. It'll be easier to be on my feet. I love that St. Matthew story. I conducted that for the first time 10 years ago and spent a lot of time preparing it, as we all would. And I was convinced that at the performance, I would turn a page and say, where's that been all this time? But I think we practiced it all. I think we practiced it all. Ellie and I talked about whether my little paragraph here should have a title yesterday, and I said, well, A Tale of Two Choruses, perhaps. I said, if it's good enough for Dickens, it's good enough for me. My topic early on assigned to me was to discuss the challenges involving auditioned groups, and so I will stick with that for a little bit. But early on to say that the auditioning part of that topic is not an immense distinction, really. Most of the challenges that I face as conductor of the two principal groups just named, most of those challenges are not necessarily related to whether or not they are auditioned. The challenges are quite different, and that's a topic for an entire other afternoon. But I will stick to the topic for a few minutes here. As to audition, even the term, I don't find it to be an exclusionary exercise. I find it to be a protective one, helping to ensure that a singer is not made to feel uncomfortable or out of place in a musical environment that is not a good match for his or her capabilities. That protection also extends to the group itself, and in particular when it is an amateur group or a dues-paying group. Those who have signed up and signed on and opened their checkbooks are people of similar capacities and gifts and purpose, motivation, and really deserve not to have those efforts marred or diminished by the presence of persons not quite up to that particular task. There's something biblical about it, and there are many gifts, distinctions. So there's the protection. We view it as a governor, perhaps, protection for the music itself. And that's the greatest of the callings. That is the art and the experience. So now auditions are called tryouts. Did you know that? Yes. Well, no more auditions. But people try out. I think it comes from the sports world. I'm not sure. But I conduct a third choir, Ali just named, besides Concord and besides the chorale. And that is at the South Church in New Britain. And the reason I'm just naming it again, that's United Church of Christ and American Baptist. They actually do get along since they merged. Our mother church is Riverside Church, so they're proud of that. Nonetheless, that is an audition choir as well. You say, well, should church choirs be auditioned? Well, my motivation, my raison d'etre for that is the same, is that there is a high call and that people need to meet a certain standard so that they are comfortable and that the message is rendered very nicely. That choir has 32 volunteers and 5 professional leaders, and we actually cannot receive any more members at this point. There's no more room, so which is really quite and perfectly balanced, and that's because of the spirit of whatever the audition provides. We can discuss later the merits of auditions. Some of you may disagree with me, in fact, on that. The other group that I have affiliation with is the Main Street Singers, a children's chorus that South Church founded. It's a non-sectarian, auditioned community children's chorus. Dr. Mary Ellen Junda, I don't know if you know that name, from UConn, had music education for quite some time, choral division. She's the music director, but I'm her partner in that endeavor, and there are some 60 children that, again, pass their tryouts by singing either one verse of America or Happy Birthday. So at least it means that they'll stand up and do something, and then in they come. Just a quick history about Concora. You've heard it reviewed a little bit already, in that Hartford, where I'm from, is so very, very far away from you that you may not have any idea what goes on down there. Although I was really glad to see so many of you come down when that award was presented about 2 years ago. Concora was founded by the South Church, where I became a minister of music immediately after graduate school out of New York City. So that was in 1974, and it was founded by the church. I was very proud of this, that they followed me. Of course, when you're 24 years old, they better. because when you get older, they're not as nearly as intimidating. But in any case, to establish a non-sectarian professional chorus as cultural outreach by the congregation. It really had nothing to do with the Sunday morning choir, although there were some people in common. So auditioned and salaried. It was salaried. The church said, well, they turned me loose to go find the money. And so that's what we did. It still exists. And in 1985, we realized the name didn't really describe who we were. We couldn't go to certain funders because we were under the church umbrella. And so we became independent, called Connecticut Choral Artists. The church gave us the blessing to do that. We are still in residence there. Our new pastor absolutely loves the fact that Concora is there. And so it's a wonderful arrangement. We do sing the works of Bach, mostly, and then we skip the 19th century in general, and then we pick up the 20th and now the 21st, as you would have commended us to do. Two years ago, we sang everything by Mendelssohn that we could find, so that was 19th century, but it was nothing. We don't do Verdi, we don't do Wagner, we don't do those. We leave those to other people. The roster of Concora is 50, so that we don't have people saying, I'm a member of Concora, but I never sing, because not everybody sings all the programs. We go out with anywhere from 12 to 42 singers. It's more analogous to a symphony orchestra, where you have your array of auditioned and roster string players, and if you're doing Haydn, you have a certain number. If you're doing Mendelssohn, you have a certain number, Mahler, a certain number. So that is how that works. The group Concora also has a quartet that goes into the public and parochial schools called Concora to Go, SATB, helping young kids understand what a mixed quartet's all about. And it's a world program, big globe, and they come touch Ethiopia, and then we sing about Ethiopia. So that's very, very a popular outreach program. And then we have On the Town, a group of eight singers who do cabaret-style, very popular music. So we feel that we cover a great span of the repertoire. Now let me jump from that group to the Hartford Chorale, already named. The Hartford Chorale is about to celebrate its 40th anniversary. I've been with them just at 6 years, and very, very happy to be their music director. I couldn't have been more surprised to be asked to take that role on. The Hartford Chorale is the region's principal symphonic chorus. So you see that it stands like a sister choir to Concora. I like to say anything that Concora doesn't sing, the chorale does, and vice versa. So the chorale, big time 19th century music. We are the principal chorus with the Hartford Symphony, and we have also, in the past few years, been engaged by the New Britain Symphony, the New Haven Symphony, and others, sort of the large chorus to go down there. That chorus, the Hartford Chorale, includes an 8-voice professional ensemble of section leaders. This model exists in other choruses throughout. If you go to your Chorus America membership page and website, you'll see Philadelphia is a very good example of that, where the Philadelphia singers provide the vocal core for the Philadelphia Orchestra chorus. And so that's what we do. And so that this core comes out of Concora, and that makes it, they have already met the standard, and they function in that very important vocal and musical role with this large choir. It is now, the Hartford Chorale is now 180 members. I inherited 120 and loved them all, but things, when a new director comes along, things change, and sometimes there's excitement. And also, Edward Cumming, the music director, this is coming up on his last season right now, really liked what he had heard with Concora, and so he wanted to know when there was a change of personnel, if I would take that position, and because he sort of called the shots at that time. And I was happy to do that. So we grew from 120 to 180 within about two years. So as to this topic, we have a triple topic today: identity, inspiration, and innovation. So I've used most of my time on identity. I'll go very quickly into inspiration, the second topic, and that's just simply, from my point of view, the music which we sing for both of these groups. The intrinsic and inward inspiration that the performers experience while preparing and presenting the great music. The audience really never knows what goes on in the rehearsals, and perhaps they don't need to. We just hope that we inspire them, but yet they don't know that the major moments for us, when our hearts beat faster and the tears flow, are in the rehearsals. When there's that wonderful moment when, oh, we got it, you know, we got it. And this is, and then we say, oh, thank goodness it happened in here in private. And then we hope to take some of that with us to the stage. But as Robert Shaw, I sang with him for 10 years, he used to say, you have no right to cry on the stage. He said, you've already got your crying done before you get up there. He says, it's the audience turn. It's the audience turn to cry. Garrison Keillor told the Chorus of America conference one time, he said, you do know, there's all these jaded conductors out there, 300 of us, just we had the answer to everything. And Garrison Keillor said, you do know the purpose of choral music, don't you? And of course, we were sort of preening, like, but we're sort of looking funny at each other. You do know the purpose of choral music, don't you? He said, to make people cry. Yeah, and the same reaction, we all did that sort of laugh, and then there was that wham, but he's right. You know, he's right. And you think about Brahms Requiem, any piece of music you're in a foray that you're going to hear next week, you know, when you get to the PAAs or the Paradiso, the tears flow. It's quite normal. And it's a good thing. Then the final topic here, innovation of our three-part topic. I'd like to think that between Concora and the Hartford Chorale, the sky's the limit as to what we can take on, and I think that's innovative. A week ago tonight, last week ago, yeah, ago is in the past, isn't it? Oh, good. That's a good thing. As opposed to next week. Concora sang seven pieces by seven conducting students, conducting majors at the Hart School of Music. Brand new pieces, hard as heck. But we did it. And that, it was an inspiration, I trust, to those students. I visited with each of them for quite some time. They visited rehearsals. We had conversations back and forth between the chorus and those composers. And then I invited them each to speak about their piece before we sang it on the University of Hartford campus last week. Maybe you know the name Amy Feldman Berman. Young people's choruses sing a lot of her music. So she's the funder for that. It's in her name. And then the Hartford Chorale next month is giving the American premiere of Stephen Montague Requiem. I don't know if you know that name, American composer, but sort of a renegade living in England. It's a friend of Edward Cumming. It's a very, very powerful piece. And so that, along with the Berlioz Te Deum, formed the final program for Hartford Chorale this season. And it is, in fact, Edward Cumming's final performance. I believe it's over a month away, almost 2 months away, and it's already sold. I believe it's already sold out. Before I sit back down, just to say, you know, the Hart School is the home of the Fuller Art Center. Did anybody have any Fuller brushes? That's Alfred C. Fuller. He carried those brushes around himself in a case, and then he had his big enterprise. Anyway, I'm like Alfred Fuller. I brought my brushes, except that they are brochures. Back there on the piano, about Main Street Singers, about Concora and others. Just also to mention that Chanticleer is singing tomorrow afternoon at South Church, where I will be. Allie asked me some very good questions yesterday. I don't know if she'll present those again as we go around today, but I said, if you'll ask me those questions, I'll give you some answers. So I'm honored to be here amongst these very distinguished colleagues, and I know that we're going to be talking about inspiration and vision, and so I hand this off to someone. Who's next?
Nick
Page, there you are.
Thank you so much.